I'd like to turn to the book of Hebrews, chapter 11. Book of Hebrews, chapter 11. We'll read verses 5 and verse 6. By faith, Enoch was translated that he should not see death, and was not found because God had translated him. For before his translation, he had this testimony that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. The setting of the book of Hebrews is the children of God, the Hebrew believers, were surrounded by unbelievers, surrounded by the influence of these unbelievers. And this influence of these unbelievers presented a great threat, presented a great danger to the children of God. This is seen from the warnings that the writer gives throughout the book. They were warned against drifting from the things that they had heard. They were warned concerning disobeying the voice of God, which would result in a departure from God. They were warned against coming short of the promises of God. They were warned against falling, leaving the elementary principles of truth. They were warned against thinking lightly of the truth and against devaluing the grace of God. They were warned against drawing back from God or pulling back from God. They were warned against fainting in their minds and against becoming discouraged and drained spiritually. They were warned against being turned out of the way. So these were all very real dangers to these Hebrew saints. And they are dangers that you and I can certainly identify with this day. In view of these dangers, the writer of Hebrews writes to stimulate, to embolden the Hebrew saints to persevere, to keep on going in the Christian life. 13 times he uses the phrase, "let us," and then it is followed by a particular duty that they were to do. For example, "let us fear, let us labor, let us hold fast our profession. Let us come boldly unto the throne of grace. Let us go on. Let us draw near. Let us hold fast. Let us consider one another. Let us lay aside every weight. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Let us have grace to go forth. Let us offer the sacrifices of praise," and so on. So he's exhorting them to continue on. That phrase, "let us," is always present tense, speaks of continuance, speaks of a progression. So the arrangement of the book is to admonish, to exhort, to motivate, to encourage the child of God not to remain stationary, not to lose heart, but to always be advancing spiritually. And therefore, the writer, his theme, he establishes from the very beginning of the book, he establishes the preeminence of Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the main feature. He's the focal point of the book. And if the dangers are to be overcome, the preeminence of Christ must be firmly established in our hearts. So this is the setting of the book of Hebrews, with the desire that God's people, the saved by grace, not be sucked in by the ungodly influence of the unbelievers. The writer exhorts them to have faith. He warns against its antithesis in Hebrews 3 and verse 12. He said, "Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God." The closing thoughts of chapter 10, leading up to our text, there in chapter 10 and verse 35, "Cast not therefore away your confidence," your assurance. And then he goes on, "For," or "because, ye have need of patience," and the word patience is endurance. "Ye have need of patience." Ye have need of endurance. And then there is that statement in verse 38, "The just," or "the justified, shall live by faith." And then that is contrasted with those in verse 38 and verse 39 of chapter 10 who draw back. So those who have faith are the opposite of those who draw back from God, who pull away from God. So from these statements, we see that faith was a key element in resisting the influence of the unbelievers that was all around them. Faith was a key element in advancing spiritually and continuing on spiritually. In the 11th chapter, the writer defines the nature of faith in verses 1 through 3 by basically declaring what faith does. He says faith is the substance, or faith is the realization or the meaningfulness of things hoped for. It is the evidence or the conviction and proof of things not seen or the invisible. From this we see that it is faith that gives present reality to eternal things. Faith makes spiritual things real. Faith is conviction and persuasion of the reality of the unseen. Faith enables one to live in the reality of eternity. We are told in verse 3 that through faith we understand. To understand is to grasp. Through faith we grasp spiritual truths. And may I say that spiritual truths grasp us also. And then beginning with verse 4, the writer illustrates the importance, the impact, and the effectiveness of faith. And he does this by using examples of men and women who lived for God. Men and women who excelled for God. And they lived for God and they excelled for God in very, very sinful and difficult times. They did not live for God or excel for God because of their talent, because of their ingenuity, because of their intellect, or because of their personality. But as you read through Hebrews 11, two phrases that occur over and over and over are "by faith" and "through faith." This is how they lived and excelled for God in difficult and trying times. It was by and through faith. And we must remember that these are people, real people, real people of flesh and blood like ourselves. People who lived in a real world. People who had real problems. Far bigger problems than you and I, as you read through Hebrews chapter 11. These are people who had real battles. These are people who had real burdens. But they lived and they died in faith. They continued on. The writer is illustrating this, using these men and women as examples to encourage these Hebrews. He is basically saying, you are surrounded by the influence of unbelievers, but you can do it. You don't have to be sucked in. You need faith. You need faith. Just like these that we read of. We see that these lived and died in faith. Their lives were greatly impacted by faith. They persevered. They did not faint in their minds. They did not draw back. They did not pull away from God. They did not become spiritually drained. They did not become spiritually defeated. They advanced spiritually in a world that was pulling in the opposite direction. How did they do it? By faith. Through faith. Then we come to our text in verse 5. We read of one such man who lived by faith. His name was Enoch. And in verse 5, we are told three times that Enoch was translated. That is, Enoch was carried from one place to another. He was moved by God from one place to another. Now, I believe that was a literal event. I believe that the Lord literally raptured Enoch. But I also believe that there is a figurative lesson, and that is being raised above the world's pull. And how did it happen? By faith. We also read that he had this testimony before he was translated, that he pleased God. In verse 6, there is a break in the continuity of the chapter. Verse 6, you have inserted the reason or the cause of Enoch's God-pleasing life. The last statement of verse 5 is that he pleased God. Verse 6, this is explained, but without faith, it is impossible. It doesn't say difficult. Says impossible. Without faith, it is impossible to please him. That refers back to the last clause of verse 5. So verse 6 is the explanation of Enoch's God-pleasing life. It is also a declaration that faith will cause one to draw near to God. It says, for he that cometh to God must believe. So this faith will cause one to draw near to God. This faith will cause one to diligently seek God. And this faith, of course, will cause one to walk with God, just as Enoch did, and to have a God-pleasing life. So we must remember that these Hebrews were surrounded by the influence of unbelievers. And the writer is exhorting them to resist. And he's encouraging them to have faith. We want to speak this morning on the subject of resisting the pull and the force of the world. We'll consider two main points. The example of Enoch, which is stated in verse 5. And then we simply want to make application to ourselves. But first of all, consider Enoch. We read three times in verse 5 that he was translated. Before he was translated, he had this testimony that he pleased God. We have the record of Enoch's life in Genesis chapter 5. His biography occurs in the midst of a genealogy. That genealogy simply gives record of so-and-so lived, and at a certain age, so-and-so begat his heir, and then after he begat his heir, so-and-so continued to live on so many years and had more children, followed by so-and-so continued to live X amount of years, and then he died. That's the pattern. And we preached on that back in the summer. But that's the pattern of Genesis chapter 5. But the pattern is broken when we come to Enoch. We are told in Genesis 5 and verse 18 that Jared, at the age of 162, begat Enoch. So we have a record of Enoch's birth. So far, everything's continuing, following the pattern of the genealogy. We are told in verse 21, still following the pattern, that Enoch lived 65 years and begat Methuselah. Pattern is still being followed. So it appears that for 65 years, the life of Enoch followed the norm. For 65 years, there doesn't seem to be anything that would set Enoch apart from all the others mentioned in the genealogy. But then we come to verse 22, and the pattern is broken. And Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years. And in that 300 year span, Enoch begat more sons and daughters. So Enoch lived a total of 365 years. In Genesis 5, his life is basically divided into two parts. 65 years, where it is simply said that Enoch lived 65 years and begat Methuselah. The other part of Enoch's life is 300 years. And Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years. So Enoch, for 65 years, lived a normal life. No child of God should want normal, because normal today is sick. For 65 years, Enoch lived a normal life. But he went from that to walking with God. He went from simply living, and it's sad today, but many of God's people, that's all they're doing, is living. That's it. They're living. Just going through the routines. Enoch did that for 65 years. But then for the next 300 years, he walked with God. He had a life that was pleasing to God. Quite a drastic change that occurred in Enoch's life. The cause of the change was faith. At the age of 65, a son was born to Enoch. And no doubt God gave instruction. Call him Methuselah. What that means is, when he is dead, it shall be sent or come. Call him Methuselah. And when he dies, judgment, the flood, is going to come. So in the birth of Enoch, or in the birth of Methuselah, Enoch received a message from God. And I believe that that message gripped the heart of Enoch. I believe that Enoch believed that message. And for the next 300 years, Enoch lived believing and knowing that when his son died, God's judgment would come. God did not tell Enoch when his son would die, just simply when he dies, it's coming. It's time. So in that message, Enoch believed time was short, and in any moment, the judgment of God would come. So Enoch knew that he was living in a society under the impending wrath of God. He knew that. He believed that. He understood that. And for the next 300 years, he walked with God. Enoch believed. And the rest of his life took on an entirely new purpose and meaning. And if we truly believe, life takes on a completely new purpose and meaning. Many of God's people today have the same purpose and their life has the same meaning as the world, because there's a lack of faith. Enoch believed, and for the rest of his life, 300 years, that's a long time, God was the dominating factor of his life. Enoch believed, and for the next 300 years, God was the object of his life. God was the emphasis of his life. Enoch believed, and for the rest of his life, Enoch had a seriousness that he did not have those first 65 years. Enoch had a passion that he did not have. He had an earnestness. He had a commitment. He had a devotion. He had a dedication to and for God that he did not have those first 65 years. Enoch believed, and it changed his life. Enoch believed, and his motives were changed. His thinking was changed. His viewpoints were changed. His priorities were changed. His goals were changed. His pursuits were changed. Everything now is moving in the direction of God because he believed. Faith will always move you in the direction of God. Faith will never move you to pull away from God. Faith will always move you in the direction of God. Enoch had faith. And for 300 years, he's moving in the direction of God. We need to ask ourselves, in what direction is our life moving? It speaks volumes concerning our faith. Enoch believed. And for the rest of his life, 300 years, he lived in the recognition of God's authority in his life. And for the next 300 years, Enoch's life was weaved to God. Enoch believed. And for 300 years, I believe he sought to worship God. He sought to praise God. He sought to love him and serve him and to have fellowship with him and to be near him and to know him and to be identified with him. Enoch believed, and for the rest of his life was drawn to God. His life was not drawn to the world. His life was drawn to God. He was occupied with God. He was obsessed with God. He was not occupied with the world. He was not obsessed with the world. He was occupied and obsessed with God. Why? Because he believed. He believed. And he intentionally directed the rest of his life toward God. And the result was, he had this testimony that he pleased God. The result also was that he was translated. Figuratively, that means that he lived above this world. Again, in verse 5 of our text, by faith, Enoch. And according to verse 6 of our text, included in this faith is a continual coming or drawing to God, a persistent seeking of God, which resulted in a habitual walking with God and a life that was pleasing to God. And all of this led to Enoch being raised above this world. Though Enoch lived during a time of lawlessness, and though he lived during a time when the emphasis was upon the pleasures of life, when people took great pleasure in sin, and when people spoke against the word of God, Jude says there were mockers. They mocked the promises of God. They ridiculed the godly. It was a time when the sons of God, the saved, were being drawn aside by the daughters of men, the unsaved, and the fashions and the pleasures of the hour were drawing God's people. Compromise was the order of the day. And through it all, Enoch believed God. Enoch believed God. Enoch came to God. Enoch sought God. And Enoch walked with God. And Enoch had a life that was pleasing to God. Though Enoch was surrounded by the influence of evil, he was not sucked in. He was not swallowed up. He was not consumed by the influence of the evil forces that were all around him. No, Enoch believed. And Enoch continued to come to God and continued to seek God and continued walking with God. And Enoch lived above the pull of this world. And you and I can too. Same way he did. By faith. That brings us to the application to ourselves. Like Enoch, if you and I that are saved are going to live a God-pleasing life, a life above the norm, note the imperative in verse 6. Without faith it is impossible to please him, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is. The secret of living a life that is pleasing to God, the secret of living a life that is above the norm, is not what we can figure out. It is not dependent upon ingenuity or ability. But this, we must believe that he is. This is far, far more than mental assent to biblical facts. Must believe that he is. A lot of people, a lot of lost people, believe God, believe there is a God. But it doesn't have any effect on their life. This is, again, more than just mental assent to biblical facts. To believe is to recognize and acknowledge God. To believe is to be persuaded. It is to have confidence in God. It is to look to Him. One who believes that He is looks to God. It is to focus upon God. It is to depend upon Him. It is to rely upon Him. It is to trust Him. It is to lean upon Him and to rest upon Him. It is to turn to Him. Not only turn to Him, it's to flee to Him. And once we have turned to Him and once we flee to Him, if we believe, we cleave to Him. We embrace Him. We cast ourselves upon Him. We yield to Him. We surrender to Him. We live in the consciousness that He is who He is. To believe is to live in the reality of God. So to believe is to be persuaded that God is able and that God will carry out and execute and implement what He has promised. Enoch believed. Notice, we must believe that He is. We must believe that He is. We must believe who He says He is. We must believe what this book says He is. Again, this is much more than just giving mental assent to who He says He is. This is much more than just giving mental assent to what this book says He is. We must believe that He is. Who is He? He's God. We must believe that He is God. We must believe that He is absolute. He is sovereign. He is invincible. He is the Most High. He is eternal. He is immutable. He's holy. He's holy. He's almighty. He's everywhere present. He's all-knowing. He's love. He's merciful. He's gracious. He's faithful. He's my strength. He's my refuge. He's my help. He is sufficient in all things. We must believe that He is. And from verse 6 we see that if we believe that He is, this will cause us to come to Him. This will not move us away from God. This will move us toward God. And we will come to Him as He is. And this believing that He is
will also cause us to seek Him as He is. Not as we imagine, but as He is. So if we want to walk with God, if we want to live an extraordinary life far above the monotony of this world, and if we want to have a life that is pleasing to God, believe that He is. Believing this, you will desire Him. And now that you desire Him, you will pursue Him as He is. This is where we find strength. This is where we find peace. This is where we find comfort. This is where we find joy. By faith, Enoch had this testimony that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please Him. For he that cometh to God must believe that He is. This is the answer. Faith. Now again, Enoch lived in evil times. Times when things were getting progressively worse leading up to the days of Noah. You and I live in a world that is under the dominion of Satan. We live in a world that is the very embodiment of Satan's spirit. We live in a world that is saturated with the influence of Satan. Satan walks about not to save, but to sink. Satan walks about not to deliver, but to destroy. Satan walks about not to bless you, but to bewilder your soul. And if he had his way, he would sink and destroy every life and every home here. If he had his way. We live in a world where we are surrounded and constantly bombarded with the fantasies, with the philosophies, with the reasonings, and with the ideas of Satan. We live in a world where the forces of hell are at work. And those who have adopted the programs and agenda of Satan are becoming more and more bold, more and more relentless, more and more determined to promote the devil's agenda. The entire world is under the influence of the gravitational pull of these things. The world at large is being pulled toward the fantasies, the philosophies, and the ideas of the devil himself. God's people should not be being pulled in that direction. Enoch resisted the pull of the world. How? By faith. He believed. You and I that are saved, we can avoid, and we can live far above the drawing force of this world. Here's something that God's people have bought into. And I don't mean every single one. But at large. We're in the last days. This is the way it is. And we just can't be as close to God. That is a lie of the devil. Yes, we are in the last days. And yes, things are bad.
But we have example upon example all through the Word of God of people who rose above the world. We have it here in Enoch, we have it in Noah, the only two men in the Bible that were said to walk with God. I'm not saying they were the only two that walked with God, but it's the only two that it says they walked with God. And they did so in very, very evil times. How did they do it? By faith. We can live above the drawing force of this world. Believe God. The more we believe, the more we will feel drawn to God. The more we will seek God, and the more we will walk with God, and the less we will feel the pull of this world. Let me say this. If you are constantly feeling the pull of this world, you've got a serious problem. You've got a serious spiritual problem. Because the child of God should feel less and less and less the pull of this world. We believe God, and we ought to feel the pull toward God more than anything else. You and I, many of us here today, we've gotten past. Long ago, we got past the pursuits of this world. We got past the philosophies of this world, and we just want to go home. We just want to leave this mess. Because we don't feel the gravitational pull toward the world. I don't feel pulled to do dope. I don't feel pulled to get tattoos. I don't feel pulled to walk around half naked. I don't feel pulled to listen to the world's music and to watch the filth on Hollywood. I don't feel pulled in those directions. The way to rise above the gravitational pull of this world is to believe that He is. And that causes us to be pulled toward God. We live in a world that is the very sphere of rebellion against God. We live in a world that is fiercely opposed to God, that sets up barriers and obstacles. It is a world that does not honor God. It is a world that does not admire God. It is a world that does not seek God. It is a world that does not trust God. It is a world that does not fear God. I feel no pull toward this world. It is a world acting under the influence of an appalling ignorance of God. I mean, we have a special kind of stupid today. I mean, people are under the influence of ignorance of God. It is a world filled with humanistic thinking, saturated and drowning in that which is sinful, in that which is ungodly, in that which is degrading, in that which is vile and repulsive and blasphemous. Drowning in that which is perverted and lewd and absolutely abominable. And the whole inclination, the mood, the current, the trend of the world is away from God. You and I should not be being pulled in that direction. This world, we make no mistake about it, it's a dark place. It's a place of many traps and snares. A place where we can get all tangled up, especially if you feel the pull toward the world. There's so many ways that we could mention that people could possibly feel the pull of the world. One of those ways, our kids have to go to college. Who says? The world says. And colleges are a cesspool today.
This world is a place of desolation. It's a place of emptiness. It's a place of waste. It's a place of misery. And the entire world is under the gravitational pull of these things. But though these are trying and difficult and threatening and dangerous and challenging and pressing and urgent times, you and I, the saved, can live above the drawing force of this world. In other words, the world does not have to win in our lives. And sad to say, that is what has happened in the lives of many children of God. The world has won. Doesn't have to be that way. How do you avoid it? Believe. Believe so much. Believe so strongly that you are drawn to God rather than drawn by this world. You see, you and I should not be dazzled by the ideas of Satan. You and I should not be taken in by the ideas of Satan. We just need to keep on believing that he is. And the more that we believe, the more we will come to him as he is. The more we will seek him as he is. The more we will walk with him as he is. And the more we will be risen above this world. Also, you and I that are saved, life consists of needs and cares and burdens and difficulties, problems, sorrows, hurts, trials, disappointments, temptations, storms, battles, struggles, uncertainty. There are deserts. There are furnaces. There are dead ends. There are apparent impossibilities. But for you and I that are saved, these things don't have to win. For you and I that are saved, we don't have to be pulled in by these things. We don't have to be defeated by these things. We don't have to live in these things. We're to believe that he is. And that's how you get through those things. These things should not draw you farther from God. If they do, it shows a lack of faith. They should draw us closer to God, cause us to seek him more and more. So the way to resist the gravitational pull of the world, believe that he is. For you and I that are saved, we do not have to be taken in and consumed by this world. We don't have to be taken in and consumed by life. We don't have to be spiritually depleted. We don't have to be spiritually drained by the world. And the world will drain you spiritually. And you don't have to be drained spiritually by the circumstances of life. And they will drain you spiritually if you let them. We need to believe that he is. That is, we need to lay hold that he is. We need to embrace that he is. This will cause us to be less, to feel less and less the pull of this world.
and it'll cause us to feel more and more a force pulling us toward God. So I ask you today, we're all being pulled in some direction. In what direction are you being pulled? Do you feel yourself being pulled and constantly tempted by the philosophies and the ideas of the world? You know, anytime I think, I hear a politician and he says something, I think, well, that's not a bad idea. I immediately get on my knees. I don't want to start agreeing. It doesn't mean I have to disagree with everything, but that's a dangerous road. We better check out what we agree with and in what direction we're being pulled. Just having a conversation in the last few weeks with some younger adults, and this isn't to condemn them, it just shows you the direction that our culture goes. They're not as appalled by homosexuality as I am. You know why? Because it's been a part of most of their life. And they will say, well, we don't agree, but you know, just calm down. Well, I find it difficult to be very calm. But that's where we're going. You see, they've been sucked in to a degree. Even though they don't agree with it, they've accepted it to some degree. I refuse to accept it. Refuse to. And there are many, many, many other things. We need to be careful. Because this world, without us even knowing it, will pull us. And oh, how we need to feel the pull toward heaven. I look forward to leaving this life. I can't hardly wait. Because I am tired of this world. And it scares me. And I am concerned about young people today, the children that are here, the world that they're going to grow up in. Oh, it scares me to death. And I'm glad I'm 59 and not 9. I'm glad I'm almost there. Because I want to leave this world. I'm tired of this world. This world sickens me. And we all have temptations. But there's not much in this world that really appeals. It just doesn't appeal. The entertainments of the world just don't mean as much. The pleasures, they just don't mean as much. The pursuits, they don't mean as much. They mean very little. We need faith. We need to just keep believing in God. Do you feel your life being pulled in the direction of God? If not, if you feel your life being pulled in the direction of the world, you need to stop right where you are. And you need to change course. You need to correct that matter before your life is ruined. Because before you know it, the world will pull you in so far it'll suck you up and consume you and destroy your family. So if you feel a pull toward the world, if you feel the world pressuring you, you've got to do this, you've got to do this in order to be considered successful. Oh, you're in dangerous ground. You're headed down a road of ruin. You need to stop. Believe, get a hold, embrace who God is, and be pulled in the direction of the Lord. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.